Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
So I had a big old intro prepared. I was going to tell you about the events of the day. I was going to tell you that protesters had converged on Stamford Bridge ahead of Chelsea and Brighton. I was going to tell you that the Brighton players were going to wear the Earn It t-shirts that Leeds players wore last night. In fact, all of the other 14 clubs' players were going to wear those t-shirts for the rest of the season. I was going to tell you at board level, the 14 Premier League clubs met today virtually and they were promising the Big Six would be held to account, that Jordan Henderson was calling a meeting of club captains, that Amazon had come out earlier in the day to come out against the Super League. No discussions, we love the fans type stuff, we're not going to be part of this. I was going to tell you Boris Johnson had vowed to block this Super League, and as we know, that man's word is his bond. I was going to tell you Alexander Seferin had told the Dirty Dozen, you've made a big mistake, but there is still time to change your mind. And we were wondering who might crack first. Now, this notion that when one goes, they would all go was explored last night on Monday Night Football. It turns out Carragher and Neville were close. Man City were second. In fact, it was Chelsea first.
And I think the six clubs we're talking about and we've criticised, and everyone's against them, their own players are against them, their own supporters are against them, it just needs one. As soon as one drops out of this or starts getting second thoughts, I think a lot of it goes. You just need one club.
Manchester City will go. Manchester City will go. Why do the Abu Dhabi people who are trying to do this for reputation around the world, who've invested in communities all around the world to build excellent football clubs, build a network of football? I was doubtful of them coming into Manchester all those years ago. What they've done to that east side of Manchester is a joke. It's awe-inspiring. It's unbelievable what they've done. The best stadiums, the best facilities, the best training grounds. They've built houses, they've built a whole area. They've created a legacy around there. They've done it for marketing and PR purposes, you could argue, and that they've done it for what would be establishing themselves as a global presence. Why do they need this? They don't need extra money. They don't need extra 50 million a year. They need to actually, to be fair, convert themselves into people who are accepted around the world as sporting people. They've got Pep Guardiola, the most amazing manager. They've created a football team, which is unbelievable. The footballers that I've never seen before in my life all playing in the same team together. City must fold. Because these two, by the way, that we support, they're gone. Manchester City don't want this. They can't need this.
Well, they were almost right. Sam Lee covers Man City for The Athletic. Sam, we were going to bring you on to say, well, Neville, Carragher, they reckon City are the chink. It turns out it was Chelsea, quickly followed by Man City. I haven't looked at a website in the last 10 seconds, so things may have changed. What's the latest?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not just saying this because I cover City. I've got no skin in the game, really. As far as I'm concerned, all clubs made a bad decision, a terrible decision, a bit of a betrayal to go with it in the first place. So I've got no interest in this. But apparently, you know, Chelsea's withdrawal was reported first, but apparently, and look, we're just kind of sifting through this now, apparently City were the ones to go first. But right. I mean, I suppose it doesn't matter too much, does it? I suppose it looks like it's done now. There's reports as well in Spain that Atletico Madrid are pulling out as well. So it looks like it's done.
What a sham,
I guess.
What an embarrassment.
Yeah, shambles.
What a shambles,
I know,
yeah.
Like, not even holding it together enough in, you know, we said the other day, maybe it's a bluff and maybe they're just doing it to get whatever from UEFA, get their own way, but they've not even been able to hold it together long enough to get that. They're probably worse off than when they started.
Well, I think that's the really interesting point as well. So we're talking about this as like a game of poker and this was their first hand and they went all in. They have now exposed the inherent weakness amongst them. I mean, their power has dwindled now to like down to embarrassment. Can you imagine them trying to muster this up again? Because everybody now knows that the bonds that tie them together are weak as hell. It took, you know, Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher going to town and Alexander Seferin saying some mean things about everyone. And, you know, that was kind of that, really. I mean, so brinksmanship it may have been, but actually they've exposed themselves as not much to worry about.
Yeah, and also, like, what could possibly be on the table in future for them to try and do this kind of breakaway league and have a better reaction from, you know, Carragher, Neville, and just, you know, fans. You know, fans turning up outside City who stuck by them through all the FFP stuff and everything else that gets thrown at the club, you know, with bed sheets saying RIP Man City on straight away. This was, you know, this was when the club was supposed to be getting £300 million and play against the best teams in the world all the time. What could they possibly offer in future that would make them fans think, oh, yeah, OK, crack on? Like, it surely can't be tabled again, anything like this. I mean, there's a million questions about what happens now. Mm. And I hope, to be fair, as much as we say they've got no power now and we're kind of reveling in that, I do hope that these clubs do have enough about them to change what UEFA wanted from the Champions League, because that reform was kind of waved through. And it was arguably worse in terms of the layout and the competition. In terms of the quality of the games, the UEFA Champions League reform is arguably worse than what the Super League was.
It's horrible. Like, the new 36-team Champions League group stage mess is an abomination. And also, I mean, tucked in at the back of it, there are two spots held back for teams with European pedigree, you know, which is very much what was so egregious, I suppose, about the Super League plan in many ways. So they have held back two spots. For instance, I would presume Liverpool. If Liverpool don't make the Champions League spot this year, who has more pedigree than Liverpool? So they'll wangle away into the back door of the Champions League from 2024 onwards. I mean, next season, I think, is the final year of the current version. But were history to repeat itself, were Liverpool to have a similar season or United to bomb next season, then there are two spots being held in reserve for teams with European pedigree. And we're not talking Nottingham Forest.
I mean, obviously, that's the non-competitive element, which is the same as the Super League. But just, you know, Man City in particular, Man City play Shakhtar Donetsk at home in the Champions League every year. Even, you know, Borussia Mönchengladbach, and that was the last 16, and there was no real jeopardy there. Mm. Like, there'd be more of those games in these UEFA reforms.
There would.
Like, they've obviously bloated it out, and that doesn't really appeal to anyone anyway. But it went under the radar because nobody was kind of mobilised to care enough. But with the Super League, they have been. So hopefully now everyone's paying attention enough and these Champions League reforms off the table as well. But like we say, who knows? Because who's got the bargaining power now, really? Like,
well, I did hear a lot of...
back to UEFA?
A lot of people... Apologies, I think there's a slight delay here. We'll make do. I did hear a lot of people on various radio stations and podcasts and you name it over the last couple of days saying, oh, Man United against Real Madrid every year. Who wants to watch that? I didn't think that was the strongest point in the world next to, as you said, Man City against Shakhtar forever.
Yeah, well, yeah, like anybody against anybody forever is not enough. But the big thing about that, sorry, I was wrestling with the delay a little there, but the big thing about that is you can't manufacture big games. If you are playing Real Madrid every year, then it doesn't matter. If you get drawn against them once every 3 or 4 years, every 5 years, every 8 years, great. But even in the Premier League, big games are big games. You can't force it because you're playing against a big team. Mm. But the big games, that's the natural thing about football, which clearly these, you know, the people who cooked it up, they don't understand. Or, you know, maybe we don't understand. Maybe what they want is to appeal to the kids who'd rather play Fortnite and just have them playing, you know, Mbappe playing Haaland every week or whatever. Maybe that works. But as fans go into the game, you know, you pay your money. Because either you go into a new place, which you wouldn't have so much. Like Milan twice a year, it doesn't sound too bad, but actually after a couple of seasons. Like diehard fans that I know, that's a bad thing, going to Milan twice a year. Like it's, you don't want to be doing it all the time. And then the games, you don't have that jeopardy. But also, even with the Super League, there's going to be a mid-table. There's going to be, well, you would say relegation places. So there's going to be games that don't matter, but there is no relegation, of course. So if you're finishing towards the bottom, but for argument's sake, let's say Arsenal, because they're not particularly good anyway.
Yeah.
If they were towards the bottom of this, but then they're in the Premier League and they needed to finish better off in the Premier League, or let's say they wanted to win the FA Cup, they'd start playing reserves in the Super League. So it was nowhere near as like kind of holy grail-like as Florentino Perez was was arguing.
No, it's true. I guess...
I don't think it's fallen apart on sporting ground. It's fallen apart for other reasons, but just thank goodness it has.
Yes, I guess the redeeming quality of all of these various iterations of a European competition is that the knockout stages are and will continue to be absolutely box office. And that's where, you know, there's jeopardy and everything you want. And we kind of endure the group stages in whatever form they take. I'm kind of curious, Sam, to get your sense. This is a tough question to answer, but like, so something has kind of started here in these 48 hours, like, in part because Gary Neville happened to be on TV and went viral, and then Monday Night Football is such an institution. And like, when you think he went to town on the Glazers, for instance, to use one example, and we could expand this to several other teams, but he went to town on the Glazers and said he felt complicit for saying nothing for a long time. And, you know, they won't even paint the stadium and like leveraged buyout, and they've taken money from the club year after year after year, hundreds of millions. And, you know, they need booting out of the club and they need booting out of the country. Now, it's kind of hard to imagine that Gary Neville just goes back to talking about United's back four in a week. So you wonder if something's been let out of the bottle here. I know, like, we're all reacting on the hoof here, but that my first thought last night was, well, even when this European Super League dies, which I was sure it would for various reasons, like, scavengers is the word to use, you know? So this is going to be very interesting to see where these owners go and the reception at the clubs for these owners. Like, I suspect we're going to see some of those green and yellow scarves again at Old Trafford, for one.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. But then again, I didn't get United very far anyway, did it, 10 years ago? And I must say I was part of that. Like, in my younger days, I was very much part of that movement.
But you didn't have the Gary Neville, et cetera, club screaming.
No, true. And also, I suppose it has joined fans together, hasn't it? You know, City fans were happy to see James Milner. Like, James Milner was one of their least favourite players. Obviously, he played for them and went to Liverpool, and that relationship's kind of soured. But, you know, City fans were happy to see United fans protesting, and, you know, Liverpool fans were happy to see Chelsea fans protesting, whatever. It kind of mobilised everybody in a way that brought down these club barriers in a way that's never been done before. And, yeah, you would hope that stays now. And it is a difficult question to answer, because I do think that, you know, City fans, for example, were livid at this. And, you know, like, they turned on the club instantly in a way that they never did, like I said earlier on, with regard to anything else. It was like, this is the first bad thing they'd ever done. And it was zero tolerance. But obviously now they've pulled out, I think there's a bit more of, oh, well, they've done the right thing after all. And obviously when you love someone, you won't focus on the fact that, oh, they did the bad thing. You know, some fans for sure will be, they did the bad thing and, okay, they've done the right thing, but they need to make up for it. But a lot will, you know, forgive and forget straight away. Obviously, as for United, I mean, look, I haven't checked in 15 minutes. Maybe United have pulled out, but they probably haven't as one of the driving forces behind this. So it will be interesting. But the other side of it is, if they didn't care, and, you know, obviously we knew from what Cheffrin said, and, I mean, maybe he's not telling the truth because he did lay it on a bit thick, but he said that Ed Woodward like lied to his face last week and said all the reforms were fine, and obviously he didn't care because he was going to go and do the Super League. But if they didn't care about that, and they didn't care about the fan reaction anyway, and they were just going to kind of ride it out and push it through, will they really care about fans, you know, doing the green and gold scarf protest again, which again was, you know, more than 10 years ago now, and it didn't matter then. So I don't know. In football, these things, they have a habit of blowing over. And like, as soon as there's actually a football match to put in front of people, even if City hadn't pulled out now, I was always waiting to see how what it would be like against Villa on Wednesday. Because I always thought, look, City are obviously still in this title race. Fans are a bit nervous because they're losing the Leeds game and to Chelsea at the weekend. But as soon as you put a football match in front of people again, it does bring them back in. Because at the end of the day, that's what people love for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And I think that will be the case in future as well. I think it will be hard for anybody to get these owners out.
Yeah, I think
there's still money in it for them.
I think that's true. And ultimately, you know, Liverpool fans will say they support Klopp and the lads. That's what they love. Yes, that's absolutely who their connection is with. And maybe John Henry's name is a little bit sullied on Merseyside for years to come. And John Henry, I think, will get over that somehow. On Man City, was your sense that they, I mean, they don't seem to have been portrayed as leaders in all this. They just went along with it when it seemed to kind of reach a critical mass, and they said, okay, well, if everyone else is in, we're in. Is that your sense of where they are on this whole thing?
Yeah, and like, again, don't get me wrong, I'm not sticking up for them at all, because the whole idea, which, you know, that's my information and it's the information that's been widely reported, that is that by Friday over the weekend, but I think it was Friday, they were basically backed into a corner and, you know, they made a decision on the hoof. But like I say, that's not me sticking up for them, because if you didn't like it, don't go along with it. So that was the situation. It'll be interesting to see if they put out a statement explaining what happened. I think a lot of fans, myself, we want them to kind of admit they made a mistake rather than, oh yeah, well, you know, they didn't give us much of a choice and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, that is the understanding for sure, that they weren't one of the ringleaders of it. I think that's why, you know, Guardiola was very disappointed, because when there was this Project Big Picture in October time, that was very much driven by United and Liverpool. And, you know, Guardiola was like, well, internally, he was like, well, we had nothing to do with this, did we? So forget it, it doesn't matter. This is them and it's gone away. But this time he was disappointed because although City didn't have much to do with drawing it up, obviously they went along with it this time. And I think that kind of internal kickback from him and the players has, you know, put the hole in the bottom of this. But yeah, they weren't one of the driving forces. They did sign up late and they're one of the first ones to pull out. I suppose, like, without sticking up for them, I suppose you can say they're not exactly wedded to this. And the strength of the feeling from fan groups and just normal fans without any affiliations to groups has been strong enough just to, yeah, persuade them to pull back out again. And who knows into what next? You know, who knows what these UEFA reforms are going to look like now? Who knows what their future is going to look like in terms of power in the Premier League? I'm sure it'll probably go back to how it was, actually. But yeah, it's interesting times.
Yeah, no, it sure is. I suspect you're a busy man with lots of pieces to write for The Athletic. Sam Lee, thanks so much. We'll let you go.
Yeah, good chat. Cheers, Joe. Thanks
Cheers.
Very much, man.
Bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Well, you won't be shocked to hear we're starting the football show early this evening. It's been an extraordinary 48 hours and the last 2 hours have really picked up the pace. We'll be joined by Philippe Auclair, Andy Mitten on the resignation of Ed Woodward at Manchester United. Dominic Fifield, who covers the London clubs for The Athletic, will join us. And up top, Gab Marcotti is with us. Hello, Gab.
Hey.
So, extraordinary. The European Super League dead as soon as it started, really.
Yeah, and I think what strikes you most, other than the universal negative reaction from so many people in the game, both here in England, but in Germany, elsewhere on the continent, was just how badly they read the room, how they were so remiss in figuring out what the reactions were going to be, how they believe their own PR. And, you know, I the opportunity to speak to two of the clubs involved, and, you know, they tried to make their case and they had reasons which they thought were valid. Those reasons were never put across. They never had a chance to win hearts and minds because they did everything so badly. And they came across as so self-serving. And I think this is mostly on the clubs who were driving this, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Liverpool, and Juventus.
It's hard to imagine a more botched effort to try and introduce this to the footballing world.
It is. And, you know, these are the smartest guys in the room, supposedly.
Yeah.
And you know what? I always wonder about it, right? If you're Glazer, you don't care, right? You didn't care before about the fan reaction. You're not going to care now. You have other priorities and more power to you. But, you know, when I looked at Andrea Agnelli, who sees himself as a leader within UEFA, a leader in the European football family and so on, thinking it would be a good idea to sign a deal on Friday and then kind of disappear on Saturday and just ghost everybody. When I look at John W. Henry and Mike Gordon, misreading what the reaction of Liverpool fans might be. You know, these are two men who in the past have, you know, taken unpopular decisions, like when they hiked the ticket prices or when they when they were going to furlough their staff. And they saw what the reaction was from the fans, and to their credit, they changed their mind. They haven't changed their mind here yet. Maybe they will. But how do you not know your own customers? How do you fail to read the room? How do you fail to read what the reaction's going to be? How do you fail to read what the reaction from politicians was going to be? And it might have just been posturing. That's what surprised me. Now, it's not entirely dead yet. We'll see what Florentino Perez is speaking in a couple hours on Spanish radio. But, it certainly doesn't look good.
Well, Florentino did a hell of a job last night in Spanish media. So, I mean, we look forward to hear what he has to say this evening. So here's what we do know. We know Man City are out. We know Chelsea are out. We know Atletico are out. We know Ed Woodward has tendered his resignation at Manchester United. Agnelli's future has been speculated about on Twitter at quite a pace. Do we have any confirmation or insight there, Gab?
Juventus are denying that he has resigned. Some people would say that he's so shameless that he's never going to resign. And, you know, his family, obviously, as he always reminds everybody, there is no single family that has owned any sports team in the world longer than his family and Juventus have. So I don't see him, you know, moving on unless he's just tired of it. But I wouldn't necessarily expect that.
Yes. So these are the Agnellis, the Fiat company, billionaires, have owned Juventus for a long time. How long, remind us, because, I mean, not everybody's as obsessed with the boardrooms of European football as they may have been over the last couple of days. How long has Andrea been very much running things there, personality type? Like, give us an insight into what's been going on with this guy driving this whole mess.
Well, he's run Juventus for about 10 years, but his family have owned a majority stake in the club. I believe since the 1920s. So, you know, he's been there throughout. And, you know, one of the most remarkable things I saw this week was watching Alexander Šefrin, the UEFA president, who's godfather to one of Agnelli's children. The two are very close. They've known each other for years. You know, talk about how betrayed he felt, how he was lied to his face, and the language that he used. And, you know, it's funny because some of these owners and some of these characters we talk about really are sort of cold-blooded businessmen, and others have egos and they have emotional reactions. And, you know, Šefrin certainly felt absolutely humiliated, and I think that's why he came out so strongly straight away. I think there are some other people on the Super League side who probably do feel humiliated and feel they failed and will step aside. And I think there's others, particularly some owners, who simply don't care and will just carry on as normal.
Mm. People are wondering if this whole thing was brinksmanship and they never expected this European Super League to happen. What's your understanding on that front?
So this is one thing which I think the media kind of missed, especially the Anglo media. They said straight away in their very first communique that, you know, we expect, you know, we look forward to meetings with UEFA and FIFA soon, right, after they'd made their announcement that they were forming this league. And Florentino last night said that essentially the model was going to be that of the highly successful EuroLeague in basketball, where you have a number of teams, I think it's 11 teams, that have these long-term licenses and are guaranteed a place in it. And then you have other teams, five or seven, I think it is, who qualify via other tournaments, winning certain national leagues. And this is done, it wasn't like this at first when they broke away, but now it's all done with the blessing of FIBA, which is the equivalent of UEFA. They expected to get to that point. They expected, you know, UEFA to run the Champions League and the Europa League in what would be minor tournaments and, you know, help determine the qualification path to their Super League. That was a plan all along.
Right.
It was never going to be, you know, they were just going to be off and play by themselves without supervision and then come into the Premier League and La Liga when it served them.
Okay, interesting. So, in effect, your prize for winning the Champions League, the new lesser Champions League, would be a place in the European Super League type thing?
Yeah, that's the work. That's how it works in EuroLeague, and that's what Florentino said last night.
Where do you think this leaves this dirty dozen, the 15, the 12, whatever the hell you want to call them at this stage, in terms of, like, they're going to try and get something like this off the ground again at some stage in the next 18 months, 24 months, who knows? I mean, what this has exposed is, one, an incompetency, and two, they didn't really have it in them to hold their nerve for very long. So, you know, in terms of, like, UEFA and even the power that fans will feel they have, this 12 better come armed properly the next time, because I don't think anybody's going to really be all that afraid that they can't see off their bluff.
Absolutely. They were confident that they could do this and that UEFA were going to fall into line.
Yeah.
And that the fans would swallow it, because ultimately fans just want to see their team and whatever. And I think the response, not just from fans, but also from players and from managers. I mean, look at what Pep Guardiola said today. And look, I know there's going to be people, these people bug me, who come out of the woodwork and say, oh, but, you know, UEFA and FIFA are hypocrites because they created a situation, blah, blah, blah. You know what? That may be true, but that's all in the past. I think what most fans are interested in right now is that when it mattered, they stood tall. They didn't allow themselves to be bullied. And I think they found that when you stand for certain things, that, you know, the rank and file, the fans, they're going to come out and they're going to support you. And the players, and ultimately it's about the players, right? That's why people pay the big monies, because they want to see these players. The players came out and supported you. And I think, you know, that was one of the big miscalculations that these Super League teams made.
Mm. Can I get your thoughts on the situation at Manchester United, Ed Woodward's departure?
So I was told that Ed Woodward was gonna leave in the summer anyway, and that it's an amicable situation. But, you know, those are club. That's club speak, right? It can't be, you know, if you're going to leave in the summer, leave in the summer. Why are you resigning now and then hanging around? Ed Woodward was called out by name by Sheffrin, saying that, according to Sheffrin, you spoke to Woodward on Thursday, who said, oh, everything's fine. What a great plan we have here. I think that is pretty damaging. I don't know. I can't pretend to know Woodward very well. But I think he brought it forward because I think he did put a lot of work into it on behalf of the Glazers. Mm. And I think in his case, I'm not saying he's ashamed, but he knows that he screwed up.
Yeah.
And he didn't deliver what he was going to deliver.
Well, I suspect Joel is saying, Ed, I'm all over everyone's websites right now saying how great this is going to be. And you've let me down quite badly here. One last broad point to put to you. Andy Mitten is going to join us later, and I'm very curious for his thoughts on this. I don't know how much of Monday Night Football you saw or didn't see last night, but it was quite striking. Neville, in particular, went after the Glazers. He called them scavengers. He once again raised the issue of the leverage buyout. He said he felt complicit in not speaking out more, referenced everything from the money they've taken out in dividends right up to the lack of paint at Old Trafford, which he called second rate. I'm not sure that genie goes back in the bottle now, and there's a sense of momentum about this. I don't think Neville, for instance, can go back to talking about United's back four next week. The Glazers in particular jump out as under threat. Not that they'll care, but do you suspect now these owners are going to come under increasing pressure as a fallout from this, or do we quickly switch back to life as normal?
Look, I genuinely don't believe that all owners are created equal, right? Even the American owners, right? I go back to the Liverpool owners in this case. Right up until this point, you know, they were adored in Merseyside, and not just because, you know, they delivered the Champions League and of course the Premier League, and not just because they weren't thoroughly unpleasant like Hicks and Gillette, but because they listened, they cared. You know, they really gave you that sense. Those are owners who understand their customers and thought it was important. I think United, because of their size, I think the Glazers felt that all people really care about is, I think he took the fans for granted. And to be fair to him, you know, if there wasn't a pandemic, Old Trafford would still be full. And what that says to me, that around the world, there are a lot of United fans who will put up with it, who put the club colors, you know, ahead of their hatred or their loathing for Glazer, or they can at least put it to one side. And there are others who obviously feel very, very differently, right? I mean, FC United exists, right? It's out there. Will this lead to more of a backlash? I don't know. I mean, it seemed to me like Ed Woodward was a big lightning rod, right? Because Joe Glazer never spoke and you never saw him.
And that's changed now, because funny enough, I think you stopped a lot of people and said, name the Glazer sons. They'd be like, there was obviously Malcolm. I think, like, now everyone knows about Joel, put it that way. You know, they're in the spotlight again, a big way.
But, you know, he's sitting there in Miami hanging out with Tom Brady. He's won, you know, like, what does he care as long as the money comes back?
Fair, fair.
And, you know, like, I get frustrated. People made this seem as like, oh, it's American owners. But yeah, it's some people, some American owners who operated in that way. But again, I was just shocked by Liverpool going this way because, like I said, the Glazers have never hidden what they were about from day one. We knew it was a leverage buyout. We knew they're going to take money out of the club. We knew they're going to make the club profitable. We knew they're going to control costs. And they did all that.
Yeah.
You know, they did exactly what they said. And they said, you don't like it? You know, we don't care. It's our club now, you know? There was an honesty to that.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't make promises that they didn't keep.
Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it as well. Listen, I know you're super busy and we've got to get moving as well. Gab Marcotti, great to have you on. Thank you very much.
Cheers, my pleasure.
Cheers. Gabriel Marcotti there. Busy 9 to 10. We're going to have Andy Mitten in a couple of minutes to give us a bit more on the United situation. Philippe Auclair and Dominic Fifield as well, who covers the London clubs, all on the way between 9 and 10.
Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now, you're very welcome back to the show. So already this evening, we have heard from Sam Lee of The Athletic about Manchester City. We just heard from Gabriele Marcotti there before news headlines. Dominic Fifield of The Athletic will join us to give us a sense of the London clubs involved in all of this. Philippe Auclair will be with us as well. He was on with us yesterday and said there was no chance that this Super League would ever get off the ground. And so it has proven. Man City officially out of the European Super League. Chelsea preparing to do so. There were 1,000 protesters at Stamford Bridge this evening. They're obviously playing a match, so they haven't officially done it just yet. Atletico have withdrawn. There's a meeting of the 12 Super League clubs over Zoom, virtual meeting in about 90 minutes' time. And of course, the other news, Ed Woodward has resigned as chairman of Manchester United. Kenny Dalglish has just tweeted in the last 15 minutes or so that Liverpool, he hopes, will do the right thing. There are reports that Andrea Agnelli has departed at Juventus. Juventus have denied those reports. His family have owned a stake at the club since the 1920s, so I suspect he won't be pushed. He may, however, say to hell with all of this. We don't know. Very happy to say Andy Mitten, editor of United We Stand, has made time for us. Hi, Andy.
How you doing?
You were on with the lads this morning. Didn't anticipate having you back.
No, I didn't anticipate what would happen today. I think this morning there was some talk quickly dismissed that there was some disharmony among the breakaway clubs. And then it wasn't really until later on in the day that the talk started to heat up that it could be Chelsea or Manchester City. I was encouraged when Pep Guardiola spoke out against the idea of the preposterous Super League, and also when Marcus Rashford tweeted, and I just sense a growing feeling that this isn't going to go away, that the people who organised it wanted it to blow over, that they knew there'd be a bit of blowback, but it was gathering momentum. And when Boris Johnson, who I didn't know had any interest whatsoever in football, said that we need to change legislation and implement legislation now, with a group of Manchester United fans who we met this morning, albeit over Zoom, I thought that the mood is so strong, the groundswell is so strong that it's becoming difficult to ignore. And then when 1,000 Chelsea fans turned up on Fulham Broadway outside Stamford Bridge, I was encouraged by that. I was encouraged by the unity among supporters across all clubs. I spoke to people from Liverpool today, and our feelings were very, very similar. Nobody wanted this Super League. The timing was terrible. It was ill-conceived. And any good that might have been in it was just completely lost with the perceived arrogance that the club had for their own fans by not communicating anything, by the news dropping. Admittedly, it was leaked an hour before Manchester United's game against Burnley. The manager left to hang out to dry and talk about a subject that he knew nothing about, because he'd only been told 20 minutes before kickoff. And I'm pleased this evening that it's all falling apart. It's an iceberg carving itself up, and it's great to see, because the greed should never have happened. And sometimes greed does succeed in football. Often it does. but not in this case.
The Glazers and Manchester United very much billed as one of the leading lights in this whole venture. There's no sense that they were wavering especially or freaked out by the frenzied reaction.
I've not been told of any sense of that. And if anything, they've got experience in frenzied reaction because they rode out the sustained storm in 2005 when they took over Manchester United. And they in 2010, when there were the green and gold protests, they appeared to pay scant regard to that as well. But clearly, it is ruffling feathers. Ed Woodward is going to depart after 7 years as United's leading suit. I mean, he wears a suit, but he doesn't wear the trousers. Joel Glazer wears the trousers, and he's the man on a day-to-day overseeing things from Florida or from Washington, D.C. And both have become deeply unpopular with Manchester United fans. I remember interviewing Ed Woodward a couple of years ago, and I do exactly the same with, you know, with the guy who follows him, and I ask tough questions, and there was fury. You know, why on earth are you even speaking to him?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, what do you want me to do? Just interview people who you like?
Man United have made the point that he was set to leave at the end of the year anyway. They've just brought this forward, but, you know, there's no great issue here. I mean, it does look like the Glazers have said, well, Ed, you did a lot of the legwork on this, so it's fallen apart at the seams. It's an embarrassment. Away you go. Is that your read?
Yeah. He's lived on the sword and he's died on the sword, because that's how I read it. I mean, that it comes out tonight within minutes of other clubs pulling out of what is looking like a failing project. It's not coincidental, is it?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. And maybe the Glazers, if they care about public relations, I'm not sure they do, but if they did, I mean, I'm sure they could wangle this a certain way and said, well, Ed told us this was the right way to go and that, you know, we just went along with what he said was good advice and the right thing to do for the club, etc., etc. He hoodwinked us as much as everyone. I mean, nobody will buy it, but they might say, well, look, it's an easy sacrificial lamb. And as you said, no Manchester United fans are weeping over Woodward's departure. So they may go that route, the Glazers.
They might do, and there are a lot of good people at Manchester United who've done really well during the lockdown, and they were horrified at these proposals, as were employees of other football clubs, but they couldn't come out and say it publicly because they'd lose their jobs. And players were concerned as well, and communication has actually improved a lot between Manchester United and the fans, and you see things like the section in the Stretford End where the fans have got autonomy. Ticket prices have been much, much better than in the 5 years when the Glazers took over. Refunds given for European away trips, which didn't happen, free trips to Astana in Kazakhstan. All of this sort of stuff would have been unheard of when I started United We Stand 30 years ago. So there's definitely been some progress, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend for 1 minute that the Glazers are loved at all. The issue of their takeover is, it still invokes anger, as it did 16 years ago in May 2005 when they took over. And they can point and say commercially we've been very successful, and they have done, but that highly leveraged takeover should never have been allowed to have happened. And I'm not convinced by that ownership model, nor by the ownership model of several other clubs. And I think if anything can come from this, it can be a look at the governance within football. I was quite surprised when Boris Johnson came out this morning and talked about bringing legislation through. Maybe he was being populist.
Yeah,
but
come on.
I mean, I wouldn't expect it of this government, which is renowned for its cronyism for a start.
Boris,
it would certainly be popular.
Vote winner. Let's nail down those Labour seats and keep them for good. You know what I mean? So, look, you raised a very interesting point there, and it comes down to the ownership at all of these clubs. Now, it is a different situation at Liverpool, where Henry, I was about to say is popular, but certainly was popular. But Henry to the rescue, took the club away from horrible Hicks and Gillette, and brings in Klopp, and look where they are now. And so it's a betrayal. This is a betrayal of the Liverpool fans. That's their relationship with their owner. Manchester United fans, I would put it to you, this is a confirmation of everything they have ever known about the Glazers. This is a confirmation of everything they've ever suspected about the Glazers. Now, the green and gold protest was serious, and you will remember it. You were in the stadiums. It was a rocky enough time They weathered it out. And I think most United fans, look, ugh, you know, Ferguson said they were okay and got the training ground and success continued. And look, they are taking lots of money, but they've generated lots of money. Let's just, you know, not make our lives a misery here and get on with things. And it had kind of died down, is I think where we were. I'm sure, you know, in your conversations with your mates, you were all still saying, don't like it, but we are where we are. What's been very interesting this past 48 hours is this now has reopened the Glazer situation. It has re-energized fans, I would suspect. And you take Gary Neville last night. I mean, he decimated them. He called them scavengers. He said they need booting out of the club, booting out of the country. Talked about how he felt complicit in not speaking up. Talked about the lack of paint at Old Trafford. I'm not sure he can go back to talking about their back four next week. United, of all the ownership situations now, this is the tinderbox.
I spoke to Gary several times yesterday before he went on television, and I've written more than anybody about the state of Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And I mean the physical state of Old Trafford, to the point that people have said, why are you writing this? We need a new centre forward. And I'm saying, no, it's really important that the development of this stadium continues. I'm not saying that now in COVID times. I'm on about pre-COVID times. You used a word there, confirmation of what the Glazers are about. It absolutely is in the eyes of many. And yes, commercially, they've been extremely astute. And yes, wins and trophies do sate fans. Fans are extremely loyal, but they're also fickle. And after the takeover in 2005, I saw people who sang, not for sale, I'm going to give up my season ticket. They didn't. They went back. The stadium was full for every single game. Mm. And I think the owners who buy into these clubs know that fans are addicted.
Yeah.
And 4,000 fans did go and form FC United, and they're still going now. And they've got a great ground in North Manchester. And the political schism which it caused, on a sort of grassroots level, it still felt now. I mean, I lost a lot of my writers to United We Stand. Friendships ended in 2005.
Did you think about going with them?
My brother was the first player to join FC United, and he dropped down 5 divisions to play for them. And some of my best friends formed FC United. And when they were forming, the people forming it didn't know that much about non-league football. Now, all my family have played semi-professional football, so... Mm. I was getting some of the phone calls. My brother actually put the first manager in. I can remember where I was when we took that call, and when he said, this is the man you should get to do it. And that man, Carl Margenson, was manager for 11 years. Some of my best friends went to FC and are still part of FC, and I wish them well. And I gave them a page in United We Stand. I carried on going to Manchester United, carried on going to all the home and away games. I saw extremes on both sides. And this civil war developed where, even though I tried to be fair and give them a page in United We Stand, on one hand I had people saying to me, it should be 4 pages. And on the other I said, why are you even acknowledging their existence?
Right.
And it took years to die down. And you saw these arguments being played out largely online, but also in real life. And everybody thought that they were right. And there was very little give. There was a lot of entrenched positions, and it was heartbreaking. And the Glazers caused that.
Yeah.
You know, people who were best friends didn't speak to each other after that day in May 2005. And I went to FC. I went a lot when my brother played. I went there with my dad. My dad really enjoyed it. And I've been pretty much every season since, but nowhere near as much as I've gone to Manchester United. But let's be honest about myself. It's also my job, Manchester United.
Sure.
You know, this morning, somebody said to me, if this Super League does go through, would you continue to report on it? And I probably would. It's my job.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm a football writer. And if I turn around to my wife and say, you know, I'm not going to go to Madrid next week to cover Real Madrid against Chelsea.
Mm.
Why?
Well, exactly. Do you think Neville and others are of a mind now to really try and lead this charge against the Glazers, make it uncomfortable for them, or will this dissolve away over the next couple of days into weeks?
It's a good question, because fan protest tends to dissolve away, and that's my worry with these things. There's always new events happening. There's always games to take people's minds off things. I think Gary's definitely emboldened. He's been pushing behind the scenes for football to have an independent regulator and putting his money where his mouth is as well. You know, he doesn't always get a good press, Gary, even from Manchester United fans, but I know loads of things he's done behind the scenes where he's put his own money into things to help out fan causes. And on Sunday night, I found myself defending him in a WhatsApp group. You know, this is how these communications go on now, where friends of mine were saying, I'm not buying into him. He's interested in Salford City. Where was he in 2005? And I said this to him yesterday. And it was quite funny watching him say it on television last night. Yeah, but I'm also glad that he did say that. And that he was contrite and felt he'd been partly complicit because no players came out in 2005. Mm. I think he's had major, well, I don't think I know because I speak to him, he's had major concerns about the ownership at Manchester United for a long time. For a time, I wondered whether him and some of the lads he'd played with were going to get more involved.
Well, I still think
the
class of 92...
Paul Scholes was helping out.
The class of 92, sorry, there's a delay in the line there, which is make this messy now. I definitely have a sense the class of 92 have that, or some of them, long term to get hold of that club.
Yeah, what they don't have is the finances to do so, because looking at the stock market valuation, and I've spoke to people who've got way more power even than Gary Neville, serious people even today, and they say that the Glazers would want, you know, 4 billion. It's a lot of money. It's a huge amount of money when you consider how little they paid for it in that highly leveraged buyout. Yeah. And what they do, it remains a cash cow for them. They can still take dividends. They're considerable to the man in the street, but they're actually quite small by corporate standards. And that's one reason why they wanted to push for this Super League, because they feel that they own this global asset, which doesn't actually make that much money. Yeah. And I'm glad that it's not going to happen. And I hope that they reconsider their role at Manchester United and realise that that they're not popular. They'll probably never be popular. But I don't know what the plan B is. You know, people last year were talking about an owner from Saudi. I'm not convinced by that model, by an oligarch or by state interference. For a long time, I thought that the Barca model was the best model. But I've seen that extremely closely, and I have my doubts about that, because unfortunately, it involves human beings and egos and the shifting plates of politics. And at times, it's been far, far worse than at Manchester United. At least the Manchester United model has been relatively stable.
Andy, listen, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure it's a very busy evening for you. Much appreciated.
Nice to talk to you.
Cheers. Andy Mitten there, editor of United We Stand. We have Philippe Auclair coming up later on. Up next, Dominic Fifield covers the London clubs for The Athletic. Spurs and Arsenal, we're coming for you next. Spurs and Arsenal, I mean, no word from them yet. Maybe they're hanging on. That will be the European Super League final 2022. We'll talk to Dominic next.
Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome back. Manchester United have released a statement on their website. It's bloody long and says bloody little, but I'll try and give you the abridged notes. United today announced executive vice chairman Ed Woodward will step down from his role at the end of 2021. He joined in 2005, executive vice chairman 2012. Then Ed says he's so, so proud. 16 years of the club. It's great. I'll treasure all the memories. Yada, 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 yeah. We invested more than $1 billion in the squad during my time here. I'm delighted with the progress the players have made under the astute leadership of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He says, I desperately did want to win the Premier League during my tenure. I'm certain the foundations are in place. Talks about the academy and how wonderful that is. 34 players have made it to the first team since 2013. Mentions Rashford and Greenwood. And on he goes, mentions the Manchester United women's team. Last 16 months, lots of unique challenges. Says the financial impact of COVID has been severe. United have been one of the most robust and resilient in the face of all the challenges. He wants to thank the fans for their support. during the good times and the bad. Finally, a pleasure to work with so many magnificent, talented, hardworking people. Co-chairman Joel Glazer added, Ed Woodward has served the club with great distinction. On behalf of everyone at United, I would like to place on record our sincere thanks for his tireless work and dedication. His contribution to the club has been massive. He will always be welcome at Old Trafford as part of the Manchester United family. Zero mention of the European Super League in that rather lengthy statement. We're joined by Dominic Fifield of The Athletic. Hey, Dominic.
Hey, Joe, how are you doing?
Very well. You largely covered the London clubs, so there's a lot going on there. I'll come to Chelsea in a second. I think we always knew they were wavering and lukewarm, and there were the protest. There was the protest, rather, at Stamford Bridge this evening. Spurs and Arsenal. I mean, just the gall of this pair in particular was almost the after the lack of competitiveness of the whole shebang, the gall of Spurs and Arsenal was almost the most infuriating thing about the whole mess. So are they coming out anytime soon, or is everybody saying, look, stop releasing statements one by one, we'll release a joint one because this thing's dead in the water? Or who knows, do Spurs and Arsenal think they're going to play in the final next year?
Look, I wonder whether the American owners involved in this project end up releasing a joint statement, possibly, given how they've clearly been working quite closely together over a prolonged period of time to try and make this work. So I don't quite know where Spurs fit into that one. But then, as you make the point, I'm not quite sure how Spurs and Arsenal fit in at all. Yes, you're right. Those were desperate acts, absolutely desperate acts to be involved. It feels almost like a bit of a death throes of old money, really, although you can't really use that analogy anymore with Arsenal because they are under American ownership. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. The speed at which this is collapsing is astonishing. I mean, I'm today is quite a day. I mean, today my own emotions have veered from despair at the way football was going. To sort of the promise of it all, and then a slight concern as well that we're not going to suddenly be in a position where we're congratulating these clubs for doing what really they should never have done in the first place. They should never have been in this position. They should never have signed up for this nonsense, if I'm honest. And then you can throw in the UEFA element as well. I mean, I feel uneasy about supporting UEFA when we've all been critical of them over the years and the monopoly that they have got in terms of competition, and this is a weird scenario where I've actually found myself wanting them to win in this argument, but I'm intrigued as to what happens next on that front as well. I mean, this isn't over. The recriminations from this will rumble on for a long time to come, and it will probably have they will probably have implications for the individuals involved who tried to negotiate this this breakaway.
Well, at the moment, Juventus have denied reports of Agnelli's departure. On Spurs and Arsenal, so I know Liverpool, Manchester United, Perez and Madrid, Agnelli and Juventus were really driving this. And we hear as well that Manchester City, Chelsea weren't so sure. Were Spurs and Arsenal just thrilled to be invited and like, well, we're not going to do much either way? Or were they trying to drive this one way or the other? Do we know?
Look, we don't know for certain because they haven't said anything. That's been one of the problems throughout this whole process. The statement on Sunday and Perez's, frankly, quite odd interview on Monday night is the extent of our knowledge from the actual men concerned at the heart of this. And we should stress that, yes, there have been media opportunities and people have been talking at these clubs to the media to try and offer us a picture of what's going on. But the reality is it's been the owners and their closest confidants and lawyers, basically, who aren't even in this country, who've been dealing this, negotiating this and sorting this out. So second guessing, I mean, I think even personnel at those clubs, including the managers, including the players, and we've seen the statements from Pep Guardiola in his press conference today, Jurgen Klopp last night, the drip feed of stuff coming out from players during the day, from Kevin De Bruyne to Luke Shaw and now Jordan Henderson, it's making clear they're disgusted at all.
Yeah.
Just shows that none of these guys, none of these employees knew what their employers were up to.
Yeah.
And that is the bottom line. I mean, that is shameful in itself.
Breaking news keeps coming. Alexander Seferin's going to enjoy this, and you can make damn sure he's going to release a lot of statements. So he has just released one. UEFA President Alexander Seferin. He says, I'm delighted to welcome Manchester City back to the European football family. I hope he has one of these for each team. I really do. He says, they have shown, how patronising is this? They've shown great intelligence in listening to the many voices. I mean, this is like the kid who stole Seffron's car. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, look, they're idiots. But in fairness, they saw the light at the end of the tunnel. They've shown great intelligence in listening to the many voices, most notably their fans. And they've spelled out the benefits that the current system has for the whole of European football. As I said to UEFA Congress, it takes courage to admit your mistake. But I never doubted they had the ability and common sense to make that decision. City, they're a real asset to the game. I'm delighted to be working with them once again for the better future of the European game. Oh, how sweet is that to type all that up? They have this botched effort on a more serious level by the 12. And like going all guns blazing, the terrible logo, the dreadful unveiling, the statement at stupid o'clock on Sunday night, not having the Germans on board, not having PSG on board, etc. Like so many failings here. Mm-hmm. In doing so and then in collapsing so quickly, they really have undermined one of the key negotiating tactics for the future, which is the other person has to believe you're going to go through with this. You know, people are saying, oh, well, this is brinksmanship or, you know, first step towards negotiation. The other people have to believe they're going to go through with this. They are a united front. That has now been exposed, destroyed. They are in such a weak position the next time they try and do this.
Well, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's the whole strategy has been bizarre, absolutely bizarre. I mean, to the extent that they, as you say, they released a statement after a day of rumour and rancour and rumour on Sunday. They released a statement in the middle of the night, effectively. And even if you're taking in American time, it's still a Sunday night. And seed all the battleground, basically. Then, in the silence that followed, it just allowed everybody who was opposed to that, to this plan, which, let's be honest, is about 99% of people who like football, just to fill the void and to completely dictate the mood around the plan. It was this whole strategy was completely warped from start to finish. Ill-conceived, considering they've spent so many years apparently planning this.
Yeah,
quite how it could unravel so spectacularly and just be so shoddy in its workings and in the early days is, I mean, it just shows it was built on sand, really, and it shows it was built on the whims of a few men, a few owners, who may not even have had that much of a relationship with each other. I mean, I don't know. I don't think Roman Abramovich gets on particularly well with Joel Glazer. Have they ever even met? I have no idea. I mean, it's they're operating in completely different circles, really. It's not as if they're both attending games at whenever, you know, Chelsea play Manchester United. It's been a mess from the start to finish. And look, it's, as I say, it's not over because, you know, JP Morgan are going to want, they've set aside funds. There's contracts have been signed here. I mean, The clubs that remain, and that's, you know, Juventus and Real Madrid, I mean, who are desperate, by the way, absolutely desperate financially. I mean, they're in a far worse predicament, arguably, than any of these Premier League clubs that joined.
Yeah.
They're going to want those contracts fulfilled, and it's all going to, I mean, it's going to kick off, and again, the next few days will be hell.
No, it's a good point. I mean, there's different perspectives in all this. Like, the American owners are coming from, at, you know, their own model perspective, I suppose, in terms of relegation and a certainty over revenue. Chelsea, Man City, kind of like, oh, okay, I mean, if everyone's doing it, I guess we'll do it and see what happens. The Spanish clubs broke, Italian clubs broke, you know, desperate to keep up with the state-run teams, the cities and PSGs of the world. So everyone's coming at it from a different angle. On Arsenal and Spurs, like, Kroenke is definitely all about the money here, and we're seeing, like, Arsenal go to rack and ruin. It's funny with Spurs. I've never given Joe Lewis a second thought. I always just associate Spurs with Levy. Spurs equals Levy. And yet, obviously, Joe Lewis is the owner. What's your sense of Spurs and Lewis and all this?
I don't know on Lewis. I don't think anyone does.
Yeah, it's amazing the profile he keeps.
Yeah, I mean, but to be honest, our insights into Daniel Levy are fairly fleeting and largely limited to Amazon documentaries.
Okay, right.
These are secretive guys, but I mean, I think it's fair to say that Levy is, in the same way that I don't know, Marina Granovskaya runs the day-to-day business at Chelsea. Levy is effectively running Spurs for Joey Lewis. I mean, he's very much the, he's very much been in these negotiations, and he's been the one that's been involved in all this. And I imagine that, you know, in the same way that at Chelsea, possibly that was Bruce Buck who was leading those, and clearly Ed Woodward at Manchester United. But, I mean, look, you can go back to 2017, and there was that famous photograph that appeared, I think, in the Daily Mail over here, of John W. Henry and Glazer and Woodward and all meeting in a restaurant in New York. And what a sensational photograph that is. And we put two and two together then, and we actually got it right. And this, you just think that, you just would have thought that, you know, 4 years on, they would have had a more coherent strategy than what we've seen in the last 48 hours.
Even just a better logo. I mean, anything. Oh, dear. Okay, listen, thanks so much for joining us. I'm sure you're busy and you're cracking away there for The Athletic, Dominic. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, all the best.
Cheers. Dominic Fifield there, who covers all the London clubs for The Athletic. Football on Off The Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Philippe Auclair is going to join us next.
Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Okay, so busy show to say the least. Sam Lee has joined us given the Man City situation. Gabriele Mercati was on earlier on. Andy Mitten on the Ed Woodward situation. Dominic Fifield just before the ad break talking about the London clubs. Very happy to say we will finish our evening with Philippe Auclair. Hello, Philippe.
Good evening to you.
It is a good evening, isn't it, Philippe?
Hey, it's all right.
You said yesterday you didn't see this getting off the ground. I mean, you couldn't have seen it crumbling this quickly at the same time. Extraordinary.
I thought 48 hours for the cracks to open, but how quickly it fell apart, this has surprised me a little bit. But I think the more we learned about the way that this thing had been put together and the sheer incompetence of some of what had been done, I think we started to think, well, it could fall apart quite quickly. And also, there were indications that some of the clubs had been quite reluctant to follow the lead of Real Madrid, Manchester United and Liverpool. What happens to those three is going to be very, very interesting indeed. And we now have confirmation of that with Manchester City obviously dropping out, which is something I think we guessed when we heard Pep Guardiola in his press conference. I think many of us thought, not sure he would say these things if he didn't have the okay from high up. And Chelsea, who were never really totally committed to the cause and were more or less in the project because they didn't want to miss out, have fallen out. Now, the question is, of course, where does that leave us? Because if we think it's a great victory for football, we should remember that yesterday was a great defeat for football because of the adoption of the new format of the Champions League, which is still going to benefit exactly the same people that we've been saying horrible things about. They are going to be the ones who profit the most from it. So we should be happy that we've avoided the worst thing. But we should also remember that in the meantime, a reform that many of us would have opposed very, very strongly just went past the post without almost anybody batting an eyelid because there was something else to be worried about.
It's true. There is something galling about UEFA emerging victorious this evening, having passed this awful new version of the Champions League. I'm not looking forward to watching the initial stages of that, I can tell you. As you allude to, there were some passive passengers in this journey, and then there were the leading protagonists, Agnelli, Perez, Manchester United, Liverpool. You said it'll be interesting to see how they're treated. Expand on that. What do you think different treatments will be dished out to different members of the Dirty Dozen?
It's very interesting to think. I think in a way that the prodigal sons and daughters will be welcomed back within the so-called family. When you see the statement from Čeferin about Manchester City this evening, I have to say I find it saccharine and very difficult to digest because it's almost as if, oh, you're such wonderful people to realize you've made a mistake when guys, you're not wonderful people at all. Mm. You know, you really try to, I'm trying to think of a polite word, but I can't think of one, but so you have to think of one for me. The fallback will be fascinating to watch, because it won't be the same for every single club. I think for a club like Chelsea, for example, it will be almost negligible.
Yeah.
Because they were always a little bit remote from the whole process. They're moving out of it quite quickly. The relationship between the ownership and the fan base is quite different from other clubs. When it comes to Liverpool FC, I think it will be extraordinarily damaging for the club because of the way that J.J. Henry and FSG have commercialized the brand, the uniqueness of what is supposed to be Liverpool Football Club. And the fans won't forget that. They've got very, very long memories in Liverpool. Real Madrid is the most fascinating one, because Florentino Perez should really been thrown out of the game, full stop.
Why?
Yes, he should be thrown out of the game. He should have been thrown out a long time ago. This man is, what can I say? We haven't got lawyers on this program, so I will stop here. But
okay.
I think that the way that this man has behaved is just dreadful. Just absolutely dreadful. And he should be made a pariah. He won't be.
Mm.
He won't be. And how are they going to get out of this situation? Because at the moment, what we're seeing is that the cracks have opened in the mirror, which means that once the cracks happen in the mirror, you know the whole mirror is going to fall off.
Mm.
It hasn't quite happened yet. So we're waiting for Florentino Perez and the others to tell us that they are genuinely out of this, and that they should. I mean, you remember this. There was this tradition in the Middle Ages when somebody confessed to a crime, that they had to put on a white shirt, carry a burning candle in their bare hands, sometimes with a rope tied around their wrists, and walk around the cathedral and around the city, expiating their sins. I would love to see that, but it's not going to happen, is it?
It's unlikely. Do you suspect this weakens this cohort and their trust in each other, and the fear that UEFA have that actually this group will ever follow through in the future? Do you think this puts a bit of a nail in any Super League hopes over the next number of years, or do you think they'll come back again?
I think there will be other projects, because it's never enough. What we're seeing today is the logical, it's a logical process which was starting in 2007, when UEFA had a choice between making it very clear that they were going to deal with the Champions League and as they saw fit, and that the power would lie with the federations and the member associations rather than with the clubs, and they decided, under Michel Platini and Gianni Infantino's guidance, to come with deal with the clubs. And we've seen what's happened since then, is that they've given up a fingernail, then it was the little finger, then it was the hand, and now they try to eat the whole body. But it is a consequence of what UEFA has been doing with the clubs for 14 years. So it's not going to stop there. And also what is not going to change is the fact that those 12 clubs and so many others around Europe are on the brink of bankruptcy. I think that the losses, the accumulated losses of the 12, the Dirty Dozen, over the 2019-20 season is around 1.2 billion euros. And that's 2019-2020. 2020-21 is going to be even worse for many of them. So we're talking about people who were really desperate for some money. Not purely, but also because of their bad management, and also because of the fact that they were not financced properly, or didn't go about their business as a club should do, as a responsible club should do, which was a means for them to get out of this situation. Now, the carpet has been whipped, or will be whipped, from under their feet. And the new system, the new Champions League system, is only coming in 24-25.
Yeah.
So therefore, there is a period which is going to be very difficult for these clubs to live through. And you might see some pretty dramatic things happen. I mean, what's going to happen to Inter? What's going to happen to Milan? Have you seen the numbers? I mean, that's just ridiculous. These clubs are so, I mean, the debt is crazy. The losses are insane. They will have to find a way to survive, to find some money. And that's it. This the money they were hoping to see fall in their pockets from where we will never know now. It's still a big mystery to me. I still wonder who was behind this project financially, if there was anyone. So the consequences will be huge. But that is something that we'll see in weeks and months to come. Right now, we're not at this stage yet. I mean, right now, it's extraordinary. We've moved from a stage where we had a competition which didn't exist, but which everybody was talking about, to a competition which doesn't exist anymore, but has never really existed, and we're still talking about it. So it's really a gallery of mirrors that we've been walking through for the last few days. And again, I have to reiterate that. And in the meantime, one of the most important reforms of the Champions League that we could fear in terms of actually being against the competitiveness and the sporting nature of the competition has happened, and almost nobody has commented on it. Some conspiracy theorists will probably tell you that it was all a plot by the big clubs to let us forget about what was going to happen. It's not the case.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think that will come into sharp focus. And, you know, it's very telling that the new reform does hold back two places for teams with European pedigree who don't qualify the normal routes to make it into the Champions League. So, for instance, if it was 2022 as opposed to 2024, then Liverpool, if they were not to make the top four, as looks very possible now, they would still get a backdoor entry into the Champions League. So clearly, that was the key issue for the Agnellis of the world. That's what they were really driving, like guaranteed Champions League places.
Yes.
Now, I would have said, even speaking with you yesterday, that I also didn't think this was going to get off the ground. The Germans weren't involved, PSG weren't involved. There were just too many moving parts and it was too botched, and it just looked like amateur error. But what I would have said was, well, the 12 of them do still carry a fair degree of weight and they do seem fairly militant about this. So I could see a point whereby 12 or 15 clubs get guaranteed spots in this 36 team behemoth of a Champions League, that would be the middle ground they would all end up on. I thought that was where we were headed. But now the way these 12 clubs and their union has been obliterated so brutally and embarrassingly, I'm not really sure anymore if that's likely, because I think UEFA will feel emboldened to stand up to them. So I don't know. This UEFA Champions League that we have for 2024, that probably will be it, do you think? That'll be, because that's going to take them from 24 through to 2033 is the plan. I'm not sure these dirty dozen now will have the barefaced cheek or the leverage to try and come at UEFA again. I think the reform we saw yesterday is what we're going to have.
I think that you're probably right. I think there are other elements at stake as well. There's an awful lot to be decided in the next few years. One point I was making earlier on with some friends was the fact that I've been really interested to see how the language of FIFA has changed drastically between January of this year, when they said that anybody who would join a Super League in Europe would be banned and prevented from taking part in FIFA-sanctioned competitions, to the statement they released on Sunday evening or Monday morning, and the speech that Gianni Infantino gave at the UEFA Congress today, which was all about dialogue and talking about, oh, you know, it's not really acceptable, blah, blah, blah. But there was no condemnation. There was absolutely no threat of throwing the people out of the game. And the reason why I say that is because I'm struck by one thing, is that only a month ago, FIFA in Rabat, in Morocco, was agitating and is agitating still for a closed league, Super League in Africa.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking there are other things at work here. We've got to go beyond the 12 clubs, which probably were 3 plus 3 plus 6, as in three leaders, three who were in the know, and six which had been brought in or who didn't want to be left behind or had no choice.
Yeah.
And we've got to make a difference between that and the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is about the politics of the game at global level, and in particular the tensions between FIFA and UEFA, where UEFA and CONMEBOL, the South American Confederation, are in a way the only counterpowers which are left to Gianni Infantino's all-powerful FIFA. And I'm not the only person who thought that the Super League was also a direct challenge at the Champions League, and therefore at UEFA, and therefore at the greatest enemy of FIFA. So I don't know if I'm clear here, because it's something which is constantly at the back of my mind, is that all that we're seeing at the moment is almost like a gigantic rehearsal for a big clash that's going to come in the years ahead of us. And there's plenty, you know, what's going to happen with the 2022 World Cup, for example. It's going to be a big test. What's going to happen to those clubs that we've been talking about, the big, big institutional clubs, which are now facing an existential threat? In a world where you do lose the capacity to function if you've got no more money, in a normal world, clubs like Inter and Milan wouldn't exist anymore.
Yes.
At the moment.
Yes. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure you're busy this evening, Philippe Auclair. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Philippe.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is pretty much us done for this evening. Now, OTBAM is back tomorrow morning. Daniel Harris is going to be on talking about the Manchester United situation. Graeme Hunter, be great to get Graeme's reaction to all this. Daniel Lambert and Stewie Byrne as well, talking League of Ireland. And then tomorrow evening, we didn't have time for him this evening, but I'm looking to pick the brain of Simon Cooper, who'll be really good on this topic, I'm sure. And then Mona McSharry on her record-breaking qualification for the Olympics, 21 years of age, going to Tokyo after her performance today in the pool. So we'll chat to Mona about her career is going. It's going well, needless to say. And then Wednesday night rugby as well. The Rainbow Cup also crumbling nearly as fast as the Super League. No South African sides will be partaking, was the news today. So that's tomorrow's show. Who knows where we'll be on the Super League front by then. We'll talk to you later.
Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.